Welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading all of the program notes for the Classical Music Series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2019 season. The program notes I am reading today are for the performance by the North Carolina Symphony at 7:30 p.m. Thursday, February 28th at Memorial Hall, UNC Chapel Hill, and Friday and Saturday, March 1st and 2nd at Maymandy Concert Hall, Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh. This concert will be conducted by guest conductor Clemens Schult, the featured soloist, violinist Jinju Cho. The program on this performance will include the following. The North Carolina Symphony comes onto the stage to perform the Romanian Concerto by George Ligeti. And that will be followed by the Violin Concerto in D Major, Opus 35, by Eric Korngold. Then, following the intermission, the symphony returns to the stage to perform the Symphony No. 2 in D Major, Opus 73, by Johannes Brahms. Now I'll begin our reading of program notes. First, some information about our guest conductor and guest soloist. Clemens Schult is the principal conductor of the Münchener Camera Orchestra, where highlights of the current season include a production of Mozart's Così fan tutte with the Theater Academy August Everding, composer portraits of Helmut Lachenmann, and Anna Thorvaldsdottir, and tour concerts in Moscow with pianist Igor Levit, in Grenoble with oboist François Leloux, and at the Mozart Würzburg with pianist Lise de La Salle and Pierre Laurent Aimard. Schult makes his debut in the United States with these North Carolina Symphony concerts. Now the guest violinist Jinju Cho. Since her concert debut at age 7, violinist Jinju Cho has won top prizes at prestigious competitions such as the International Violin Competition of Indianapolis, the Montreal International Musical Competition, Buenos Aires International Violin Competition, and the Alice and Eleanor Schoenfeld International String Competition, and she was also a laureate of the 2011 Isang Jung International Music Competition. A passionate teacher, Cho is on the violin faculty at the Schulich School of Music at McGill University and has previously taught at the Cleveland Institute of Music and Oberlin Conservatory. She is also the founder and artistic director of Encore Chamber Music, an intensive summer training program for talented young performers in Cleveland, and she regularly gives master classes worldwide. Now, information about the program. The North Carolina Symphony will begin this concert with the Romanian Concerto by George Ligeti. Ligeti was born May 28, 1923, in Transylvania, Romania. He died June 12, 2006 in Vienna. The work was composed in 1951, the first performance, August 12, 1971, at the Peninsula Music Festival in Wisconsin. Now, here is the overview. The son of Hungarian parents from Transylvania, George Ligeti spent his youth in Cluj, Romania, where he attended the city's conservatory, continuing his musical studies in Budapest. In 1942, he was sent to a forced labor camp. Hungary's reluctance sopped to Hitler's virulent anti-Semitism. The rest of his family was annihilated when the Germans occupied Hungary in 1944 as they fled from defeat in the Soviet Union. Following the war, Ligeti resumed his studies and in 1950 joined the faculty at the Franz Liszt Academy in Budapest as a harmony teacher. Until his escape from Hungary in 1956, most of his published compositions were arrangements of Romanian and Hungarian folk songs and Roma or Gypsy melodies, while his more serious works remained unpublished since they did not conform to the politicized Soviet Soviet-style structures. Once Ligeti had settled in the West, his music changed dramatically. In the studios of the West German radio in Cologne, he learned the techniques of serialism and electronic music, experimenting in both systems, but ultimately rejecting both his own free, atonal style, concentrated on shifting instrumental colors and textures. The Romanian Concerto, however, belongs to Ligeti's earlier Hungarian period, and he writes, "In 1949, I learned how to transcribe folk songs from wax cylinders at the Folklore Institute in Bucharest. Many of these melodies stuck in my memory and led in 1951 to the composition of my Romanian Concerto. However, not everything in it is genuinely Romanian, as I also invented elements in the spirit of the village bands. I was later able to hear the piece of an orchestral rehearsal in Budapest. A public performance has been forbidden. Under Stalin's dictatorship, even folk music was allowed only in a politically correct form. In other words, if forced into the straitjacket of the norms of socialist realism, major-minor harmonizations were welcome, and even modal orientalisms in the style of Kachaturian were still permitted, but Stravinsky was excommunicated. The peculiar way in which village bands harmonize their music, often full of dissonances and against the grain, was regarded as incorrect. In the fourth movement of my Romanian Concerto, there is a passage in which an F sharp is heard in the context of F major. This was reason enough for the apparatus responsible for the arts to ban the entire piece." Now here's what to listen for. The Romanian Concerto is a concerto for orchestra, reflecting the influence of Bartok and Enescu, two composers whose takes on indigenous music were quite different. From Bartok, Ligeti learned the importance of careful research into the authentic modes, melodies, sonorities, and rhythms of peasant music. From Enescu, he borrowed the tradition of Roma fiddling, heard primarily in the cafes of middle European cities. In the first movement, one hears a modality and harmony that seems almost medieval in style, its harmonies built on open fourths and fifths. The following allegro is a contest in which various small orchestral groups repeat a single folk melody. At the opening of the third movement, two Romanian mountain horns call to each other from a distance. Ligeti instructs the players to use natural tuning, which produces a slightly out-of-tune quality to those used to equal temperament. This is the most Bartok-like of the movements. The woodwind writing closely resembles that of the slow movement from Bartok's Concerto for Orchestra and may have been composed in homage to Bartok. The final movement is a fiddling showcase a la Enescu. It concludes with a reprise of the horn duet plus a single violin at the almost inaudible extreme top of its range. The instrumentation for this work is as follows. It's for piccolo, flute, oboe, English horn, two clarinets, two bassoons, three horns, two trumpets, percussion, and strings. Next, the North Carolina Symphony performs the Violin Concerto in D Major, Opus 35, by Eric Korngold. Korngold was born May 29, 1897, in Brno, Czech Republic. He died November 29, 1957, in Los Angeles. The work was composed in 1945. The first performance, February 15, 1947, by the St. Louis Symphony, Vladimir Golschmann conducting. Yasha Heifetz was the violinist. Now here is the overview. Eric Wolfgang Korngold is a representative of the last gasp of late Romanticism in Vienna. He never veered from this established idiom and never ventured into modernistic experiments. He began his career as a true child prodigy whose works were performed in public in Vienna by the time he was 11, although the fact that his father was the music critic of Vienna's most prestigious newspaper may have helped. By the time Korngold came to Hollywood in 1934, his classical compositions were regarded as superficial and irrelevant to the proponents of the mainstream 20th century modernism. But Hollywood adored him. Korngold saw film as the true successor to the operatic stage. His success as a composer of film music was phenomenal. Two of his scores, Anthony Adverse in 1936 and Robin Hood in 1938, won Oscars. The film music scene in Hollywood of the 1930s and 40s was dominated by German and Austrian émigrés who had escaped Nazism. It is not surprising, therefore, that when Korngold once again took up his classical pen in 1945 to write his violin concerto, he dedicated it to an old family friend, the doyen of the émigré, Franz Werfel's wife and Gustav Mahler's widow, the legendary Alma Mahler. No less a master than Yasha Heifetz premiered the concerto. Now here's what to listen for. It is an amusing exercise when listening to the concerto to note how many themes and passages immediately call to mind the musical conventions we have come to associate with certain kinds of film action. We make these associations on the basis of countless hours of movie going during which the musical language has implanted itself in the subconscious, perhaps even into the collective unconscious, and controlled our emotional response. In the concerto, Korngold reworked music from his successful film scores, including Juarez, 1939, Anthony Adverse, 1936, Another Dawn, 1937, and The Prince and the Pauper in 1937. But the concerto is not all movie music. Korngold transforms the themes to conform to the concert conventions of the concertos of composers from Mendelssohn to Max Bruch. The technical and expressive demands, as well as the harmonies, surpass melodic clichés. Although it reflects the composer's nostalgic attachment to fin de siècle, Viennese romanticism, even the most discerning 21st century ears, are eclectic and accepting, no longer trapped in the clutches of atonal dogma. Well, most important of all, Korngold's writing for the violin is everything a soloist could dream of. The first movement's main theme from Another Dawn is a multifaceted melody and an ancestor of the Star Trek theme. The more sentimental second theme is from Juarez. The development inhabits the violin's stratosphere. The second movement is a rhapsodic romantic reverie on a theme from Anthony Adverse. As opposed to the sprawling melodies from the first movement, this one is surprisingly simple. Heating up the passion, Korngold uses a more expansive melody for the middle section. In the energetic, humorous finale, Korngold teases the listener by delaying an outright statement of the movement's single theme from The Prince and the Pauper. Instead, the soloist starts with a fanciful melody containing hints of the theme for a couple of minutes until the soloist finally pins it down. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: solo violin, piccolo, two flutes, two oboes, English horn, two clarinets, bass clarinet, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, tuba, timpani, percussion, harp, celeste, and strings. Following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage to perform the Symphony No. 2 in D Major, Opus 73, by Johannes Brahms. Brahms was born May 7, 1833, in Hamburg. He died April 3, 1897, in Vienna. This work was composed in 1877, the first performance December 30, 1877, by the Vienna Philharmonic. Hans Richter was the conductor. Now here is the overview. Unsure of his ability to compose symphonies, Brahms took 14 years to finish his first in 1876. Its critical and popular success, while far from overwhelming, gave him the confidence to try his hand at a symphony again, and this time with much greater assurance. It took him just a few months in the summer and fall of 1877 to compose his second symphony. The contrast between the two is an analogous to that between Beethoven's Fifth and Sixth Symphonies. Brahms spent the summer of 1877 in Porchak, an out-of-the-way village in the Austrian countryside, from where he wrote to Vienna's chief music critic, Eduard Hanslick, "So many melodies fly about, one must be careful not to step on them." The symphony's sunny spirit, especially the last two movements and relatively transparent orchestration, harks back to the young Brahms of the two orchestral serenades in 1856-60, and has less of the dense orchestration that permeates much of Brahms' symphonic writing. It induced one of the composer's friends to exclaim, "It is all rippling streams, blue sky, sunshine, and cool green shadows. How beautiful it must be at Porchak." But true to Brahms' nature, the symphony has its darker moments. Clara Schumann commented on the somber mood in parts of the first movement, and when a friend objected to the gloom and harshness of the trombones in the second movement, the composer replied that it reflects his habitual melancholy. Brahms kept all but his closest friends in the dark about the character of the new work, hinting that it was tragic, somber, dirge-like, and adding facetiously, would require the orchestra members to wear black crepe armbands. Well, the premiere was an unqualified success, and the ebullient third movement had to be repeated at the insistence of the enthusiastic audience. Now here's what to listen for. The first movement begins gently, only gradually building in dramatic intensity. The opening three notes in the cellos and basses represent a three-note motivic element, motto, that pervades the first movement, sometimes in the melody, sometimes as an accompanying figure. Yet offsetting this persistent kernel is a considerable array of themes, some of which find the little motif embedded within them. Various discussions of this movement refer to it as sunny, but it is more like a sun that frequently hides behind clouds. The second theme in the distant key of F sharp minor is one of the darker moments and becomes the heart of the development section. Nevertheless, good weather prevails by the end with a gentle coda recalling the motto and ending with a restatement of the first theme. Like the preceding movement, the Adagio non troppo is packed with melodies, but this time the sunshine pretty much stays behind the clouds from the start. Here Brahms breaks down his longer themes into fragments using the three-note motto from the first movement as well. The scherzo opens with a beautiful allegro grazioso solo for the reed woodwinds, accompanied by pizzicato cellos. In an unusual move, Brahms uses the scherzo theme again in the trio, only speeded up and in 2-4 time instead of 3-4. The repeat of the scherzo is a free variation with only brief reprises of the original woodwind melody. The finale, Allegro con spirito, is the most festive movement Brahms ever wrote. It begins with a gray, subdued rhythmic variation of the three-note motto from the opening movement, once again in the cellos and basses. Brahms incorporates it into the beginning of the principal theme. The mood becomes gradually more excited, and the symphony concludes in blazing optimism with a trumpet fanfare. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, and strings. These program notes were written and copyrighted in 2018 by Joseph and Elizabeth Kahn. You have been listening to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I will be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2019 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will be available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas. Thanks so much for joining me today. We sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.